It's 2 o'clock, and time for a conversation with Elizabeth Barrett, the reluctant therapist. What's on your mind today, Elizabeth?
Well, Ben, today graduation is on my mind because we're seeing all of the posts and pictures and excited graduates popping up all over the place. And of course, I've gotten my annual allotment of graduation announcements from friends about their children who are celebrating being done with high school and with college, and even a few who have graduated from preschool, which is a whole other topic about why we have these elaborate ceremonies for preschool and sixth grade. But having said that, graduation is an incredibly important milestone in someone's life, in anyone's life who has the privilege of getting to a point where they are earning a higher level graduate degree or a degree from a college. And also, you know, high school graduation is important because it is the beginning of their process of moving into adulthood. They should be celebrated. And like many rituals and ceremonies, there's a reason why graduations are laid out the way they are. And it always disappoints me when I hear from my students how unexcited they are about attending graduation. And I understand it's usually the hottest day of the year, for whatever reason, when we have graduation, no matter where you were. It was the hottest day of the year when I graduated from UC Santa Barbara in 1983. It had never been that hot before. And my daughter graduated, you know, from UCLA. It's just, it ends up being the hottest year day. I accept that. And they're long. The ceremonies are long. If you go to a big university and you feel like you can get lost in the crowd, I understand all of the complaints. But if we understood the importance of what the ceremony was, I would hope that more people would take it seriously. Because every ceremony has kind of a ritual connection to our psyche. This experience that we're going through that indicates to our psyche that something is different. So I'm going to start with weddings. We'll do graduations next. When someone gets married, traditionally, you know, you get engaged, that symbolizes that you have changed in your life, something new is coming. You go through the engagement process, which is this second part of the liminal transformation where you're learning the skills of what it takes to be married. Your families are meeting each other. You're kind of talking about the nest you'll build and, you know, being prepared to take on this contract and this new life. And literally, when you get married, you change as a human being. You become connected to another. Your entire existence changes in that moment. And as a side note, marriages would be more successful if people really understood what their marriage vows meant and what they were taking on and weren't so casual, that the whole idea is that we, you know, blend our lives into one with another and move forward. And then you have that ceremony. And the ceremony is the process of getting together with witnesses who are there to do more than just eat, you know, cruddy chicken and bring your present. But the witnesses at a wedding are really supposed to be those people who are there to say, if you get into trouble as a couple, we will come forward and help you find your way. We will support you. That's what those witnesses are there to really do. And then you take your vows, you go through the ceremonial process, exchange rings or whatever it is you exchange, and, you know, make those commitments to each other. And then in most ceremonies, it ends with kissing, you know, the bride or kissing each other to symbolize that connection, that union. And then you turn and face your witnesses as a couple. You walk in as two single people. You come down the aisle as a single person, but you turn and face your witnesses as a now married couple that no man put us under. And then you leave. And that moment of exchanging rings, making the kiss, going down the aisle, says to your psyche, I am different now. Something has changed, and this is important. And then we finish that ceremony generally with some sort of celebration with dancing and food and toasts and joy. So graduation has that same format where you get into college and that announces to the world that something is different. I am now going to be a Cal Poly Mustang, or for me, it was a, you know, UCSB Gaucho. And that begins the process of this liminal transformation where you spend 3, 4, 5 years, however long it takes you, taking classes, navigating young adulthood, meeting friends, dealing with housing, all of those challenges. You get enough requirements that you have now qualified to become a graduate, and then you have the ceremony. And here you come in the ceremony dressed in your finery, just like in a wedding, dressed in your finery in the cap and gown with your tassel. You march in as a college student. All the witnesses are there. And these witnesses are people who are invested in you, invested in your life, are making this promise that they're going to help and support you as you move on into adulthood. That's their reason for being there. And, you know, bring some cash, that too. But they're there to experience it. And then there are the speeches and the dedication, and then you get your diploma, your name is called. And then after that, the last motion is to move the tassel from one side of your cap to the other. And that is a purposeful, intentional move because it cues the psyche, something has changed. I came in as a college student, I am leaving as a graduate. And then you march out a different person. And then generally most people celebrate with a feast of some kind, food, dancing, toasts. These ceremonies, these ritual transformations are so important because without them, when we don't mark these transitions, we leave gaps in our developmental process as human beings. It's so important that we mark these occasions, whether it's, you know, from high school or from college or for getting married or when a baby, you know, comes into the family. Baby showers are supposed to have that same kind of transformative experience, or if you go through and do a christening for a baby. All of these ritual transformative experiences have this format because we need to help people make these developmental transitions in their mind, in their psyche, in their soul, so they're willing and ready, or able and ready, to take on the new tasks and roles and responsibilities that come with this acknowledgement. And so as a college graduate, some of the tasks and roles and responsibilities include looking for employment so that you can contribute to society and care for yourself and your future family, that you become a productive and engaged citizen. That responsibility means voting. It means participating in county government or local government, taking on leadership roles in different committees or being in volunteer organizations. All of these things are your commitment, task, and responsibility as you move into adulthood. And that degree gives you that status in society to move into different career opportunities. And there are whole arguments and conversations we can have about whether the degree is worth it and if there's an ROI, return on investment, and all of kind of the economic pieces of it. But I can tell you from a psychological perspective, if you have the privilege of moving on to higher education and earning a degree as an undergraduate or even a graduate student, you're in really fine company and actually a small segment of our population, because currently only 38% of American citizens or American people in America have a college degree, those that are 25 and older, only 38%. And we quite often talk about college as if everyone is going, but really it's still a very privileged experience that not a lot of people are able to go to. And so if you've had that opportunity to take that education, to take these experiences, to take the networking, the people that you've met, and to be able to build a life, your other responsibility is to then contribute to the greater good. Because if a third of the population is earning the education and opportunities of college degree, part of that degree includes you also need to come back and give back and lift up all others in our communities. Because ultimately, we only all flourish as a culture and society dependent on how those with the least means are able to get by in our culture and society. And so those with the most means should be lifting up those with the least means. And with a college degree, you have the opportunities to do the most. And I know that's counter to, again, what a lot of the cultural narrative is, that college graduates don't have opportunities, or they're struggling, or they're not working up to their potential. But a lot of that is an economic reality, but it's also not a forever sentence. There is statistics that showing that actually those with liberal arts degrees do quite well with those degrees that people consider to be not important. But we found that those with liberal arts degrees, creative arts degrees, are creative thinkers. They tend to be entrepreneurs. They tend to be able to adjust and adapt to the job market really well and find themselves being very successful. Those that have business degrees are one of the fastest growing markets in America, one of the highest paid jobs and most in demand are nursing degrees. And a nursing degree, when you have a graduate degree and then you go on to nursing school, pays even more. Like, there are all these benefits that that college degree lift or bump gives to people. And one of the most important are the social and emotional skills that people develop during their time at college, that you are forced into situations where you need to adapt and learn to get along with others and make health decisions and make intimacy decisions and learn about relationships and deal with disappointments and setbacks and develop that resilience. I mean, those are incredible gifts that someone has the opportunity to develop while they're also learning and educating themselves. So I'm a big advocate for attending graduation. And all quarter, and most quarters, I've been fortunate enough to have an intern from Cal Poly who comes and works with me and helps me get guests for the show and get organized and get my questions together. And this quarter, I've had a wonderful, last two quarters, my wonderful Jackie has been working with me to get the show organized. And we have a couple, we've had some great guests. Thank you, Jackie. But I invited her to come in and talk about her experiences as a college student and what she's looking forward to now that she will be part of the graduating class of 2026. And I'd also like to open it up to you. What kind of advice would you have for the college graduates of 2026? What have you found to be helpful for you now post-graduation and into your adulthood? We'll just kind of see where it takes us. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. You can also find me after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or you can find me on Instagram and Facebook, send a message that way, or find me on our webpage, thereluctanttherapist.com. Lots of information there. Book you might be interested in. And then you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org. We've got 10 years worth of shows that you could peruse. Or if you'd like to stay more current, you can podcast the show and listen at your convenience through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR Podcasts, wherever it is you find your podcasts. Look for a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Hit subscribe, leave us a review, which is really helpful. And then you can share the show with others and listen when you have time. All right. So that's where I am today, Ben. When you asked me what's on my mind, that was a lot. We're going to take a quick break and come back and start our conversation with Jackie and with you right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
There's a darkness upon me that's flooded in light. In the fine print, they tell me what's wrong and what's right. And it comes in black and it comes in white, and I'm frightened by those who don't see it. Where nothing is owed, deserved, or expected. And your life doesn't change by the man that's elected. If you're loved by someone you're never rejected, decide what to be and go be it. There was a dream, and one day I could see it. Like a bird in a cage, I broke in and demanded that somebody free it.
Ben, what was that song? I picked it.
That was the Abbott Brothers' Head Full of Doubt.
I love that song. I mean, I always think very deeply about what songs we're going to play for the show because I want to, you know, kind of keep the mood. But it started off a little dark. I thought, ooh, I don't know if I liked it. But then it kind of goes into this whole beautiful thing about taking a stand and speaking your mind and finding your path. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad you heard it too. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's not the first time that we've seen you on the air or had you on the air with us before.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you're here.
I've been on a couple times now.
So, do you feel ready for this weekend? And what day is your graduation?
Sunday.
Okay.
I'm the last, the liberal arts college is the last college to graduate, so Sunday. Do I feel ready? That's a good question. I feel like it's gone by so fast that I haven't had time for it to hit me that I'm graduating. I notice that I've been driving on Los Osos Valley Road, or I'll do things and I think, like, wait a minute, this could be the last time that I'm going to be doing this. So I'm trying to do all of the things that I loved doing in SLO, a lot of it being outside. So, yeah, I'm kind of, I feel like, processing it through doing the things that I've enjoyed doing here.
So why, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Santa Cruz, so 2.5 hours north of here.
And why did you choose to come to Cal Poly?
That's a great question. I didn't expect to go to Cal Poly. A lot of people from where I'm from end up here. And so I was always kind of anti-Cal Poly, if I'm being honest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I applied. I got in. I first came here being a sociology major. I chose it because I visited and I really liked the area that it was in. I'm kind of the type of person where I pick the area first and then I kind of base my decision off the area that I want to be in. So yeah, I loved the Central Coast. It's also not that far away from home, but it's far away enough. So yeah, that's kind of why I picked it. Also, it's a great school, obviously.
And just continues to get better.
Yeah.
According to all of the statistics. And
yes. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
And so you switched from sociology to psychology.
Yeah. I took my first psych class freshman year. It was a big lecture hall with like 300 students. And the professor who lectured, I can't remember his name, but it was his last quarter ever lecturing. And he was amazing.
It was probably Don Ruscian.
Yes, it was. He was awesome and super inspiring. And yeah, I took that class and I immediately was drawn to psychology. And I had always kind of been interested in it, but I almost like didn't know what, like, I was always interested in the topics that psychology surrounds, but I didn't know that you could kind of get a degree in that. So I switched one of the classes that, because at Cal Poly you have to take three classes consecutively in order to switch over. One of them was yours, family psych. And so, yeah, that just kind of continued my love for psychology, and I've loved it. It's been awesome. It's been a great 4 years.
So what about your experience at college did you find most interesting and helpful that you that surprised you?
I think overall what I have learned throughout my 4 years here is that it's not just about the education. It's kind of obvious, but until you've actually done it, it's very clear at the end that it's really about the connections that you make and the community that you choose to surround yourself with and kind of the chosen family that you have here. And so that has been the most interesting thing to me, is to like be here now, not even a couple days away from graduation. And I was doing reflection and I just kind of was thinking to myself, like, wow, it's really the people that have made this experience the best 4 years of my life so far. So
how did you find your people that have ended up being your closest group, you call your found family?
Yeah. So I was lucky to get put into a really great dorm. My freshman year roommate, her and I are still best friends. We found each other on Instagram randomly. She was the first person that I messaged. I like took a risk. I just had a feeling that we would be friends, and I'd never done that before. And I got really lucky. And so, yeah, we got to room together, and then we made two other friends. One of our friends is from Santa Cruz, where I'm from, but we didn't know each other prior. And then her roommate. So the four of us became like best friends. And then we became really close with other people in our dorm. And so we've all been super close throughout college. And yeah, it was just kind of sitting on the grass outside and meeting people. And then you just kind of become close with them. And everyone kind of wants to make friends at the beginning of college, I feel like. And you kind of cling to people in the beginning, and or everyone clings to each other, and then you kind of not weed out, but find like your really close people that you connect with. And so now, 4 years later, I'm still super close with the people that I've experienced all of this with. So yeah, it's been great.
I am still closest to one of my roommates who would have never been a friend of mine in a million years. And at UCSB back in the day, you just were randomly put with someone. My freshman year roommate was wonderful. And, you know, we were nothing alike, but it was a great learning experience. And then I met that year Becky Avila, who was from Los Angeles and I was from the Bay Area. And we just kind of, we just got each other. We just got each other, I'm going to say, because we didn't have the same interests. We didn't have the same groups, but we were roommates then from sophomore, junior, senior year, lived in our apartments, and have remained incredibly close all these years. As a matter of fact, we're both retiring on the same day, on June 15th, and we're going to meet each other to kind of celebrate that we've spent our whole adult life in this close relationship. And I think about that because I can name a couple classes at UCSB I loved. One was Human Sexuality, was fabulous, and another was a pop culture class that was taught by the program director at K-Tide. The only two classes, I can't even remember many of my communications classes. But my relationships with the women that I was close to, and there's just probably three of us at this point, have been the most important part of my memories, aside from having the opportunity to live in go to school in Santa Barbara.
But yeah.
Yeah, those friendships and relationships. I hope I learned something. I mean, I did take all the classes.
Yeah.
I often say that my college degree made me a really good Jeopardy player.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Yeah.
A lot of broad knowledge.
Yes.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Jackie. She is my intern, has been my intern the last couple quarters, done a wonderful job, and she's getting ready to graduate from Cal Poly and move on. And I asked her to come in today and kind of reflect on her experience as a college student. Also, I want to talk about what she thinks is going to be happening, or what is the world that she's stepping into after graduation. Also, like to open up the phone lines and ask you what kind of advice you might have for a college graduate. What have you learned that you think might be helpful for someone who's stepping out into the world in 2026? Our number is 805-781-3875. Jackie says she's totally open to the advice because no one loves advice more than someone in their 20s.
I am open. I'm very
okay,
open.
Good. I love that. 805-781-3875 is our number. All right. We talked a little bit about what you found most interesting, what you found most helpful, and what you will miss about being a student. What were some of the classes that you found most interesting and the most helpful that also kind of surprised you, and why were they interesting and helpful?
The first one that comes to mind, I took with Cody Place, who was here last week.
Yes.
She
is a fan favorite.
Yeah, she's amazing. I took social psych with her, but not this past quarter, but quarter before that, I took the behavioral effects of psychoactive drugs with her. And that really, I feel like, opened my eyes to different perspectives on the way that we view drugs, whether it be recreationally or pharmaceutically. Mm-hmm. And she, one thing that I feel like I should say is that sometimes a class might not sound as interesting on paper, but then you go into it and it's really the professor who makes the class. Just like we've been saying, it's the people who make college. It's true. Like, it really is the professor that makes a class interesting. For the majority of classes I've had at least psych-wise at Cal Poly, I've really enjoyed them all because for some reason psych professors tend to be really great people. And so, yeah, Cody Place is one of those people. She's so great at like capturing the attention of students, which I feel like is really hard to do now. She only writes on a whiteboard, so anything she writes on a whiteboard is testable. Anything else is not, which is, I've never had a class like that before. Usually I'm scrambling.
You have to come to class.
Exactly, that too. Or make a friend, but I always was like so focused in her class on her that I never really talked to anyone else. But yeah, so that was really awesome because I was actually listening to what she had to say, not focusing on like rushing to have to write down everything on a slideshow. And yeah, I think she has a lot of amazing knowledge. And so, yeah, that was one of my favorites. And then, of course, Family Psych with you was my other favorite.
I'm not paying for you.
No, she's not. I have gotten so many people to take your, like everyone I tell who asks me every quarter, you know, when you're signing up for classes, what class should I take? I always say Family Psych. And if you're a psych student, I'd say to take Intro to Clinical and Counseling. Yeah, I took Family Psych freshman year, which was, I guess, what, 3-4 years ago now. And I still
were we in COVID restrictions then? Or were we done?
No, we were in that annoying construction building, okay, though.
We had to yell,
yeah,
over the construction.
Exactly.
But we were done with COVID, so you got to be in class.
And, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. It was like 2 years after that. But yeah, I really enjoyed your class because you were, it was like a breath of fresh air is the best way I could describe it. It just felt like you were very authentic and genuine, and you were very, like, you're so inspiring, okay, in the way that you, like, teach. And, yeah, I still remember specific things that you taught, you know, about, like, body image and the nuclear family and all that kind of stuff. And I remember exactly where I was in the class. And I think a lot of students can resonate with that. So yeah, Family Psych, Behavioral Effects of Psychoactive Drugs. Of course, I've had other really great classes.
How about a general ed class that was out of your,
yeah,
major?
Cultural Anthropology.
Oh, yes, I love that.
Which it's funny, I didn't even really get a great grade in that class, but sometimes those are the best classes. I loved Cultural Anthropology. I took it beginning of my second year, so it's been a while now, but I just remember being, and that was a really great professor too. I was just really interested in like the reason why things came to be, I guess, like getting to the root of why things are the way they are now. That really interested me because I feel like I'm the type of person that like things need to logically make sense. Yeah. So that was a really cool class. I loved that general ed class.
As you're talking, Ben, who's producing us today, is also a Cal Poly graduate, a few years out. And you liked cultural anthropology as well.
Yeah, I was nodding my head because I also took that class, and it was a great one.
And there's a professor, again, that you loved.
Yeah, I forget who the professor was, but she was a sort of younger professor, and she was excellent. Yeah, sociology and talking about all that stuff.
What was another class in general ed that surprised you that you're interested in? Having been a music major, what was off book for you?
So I'm a music major, but I also took a lot of biology and sort of ecology classes. And one of my favorite ones was, it was 114. I remember the number, but I don't really remember the actual title of the class. But we went out on field trips, and this was when COVID was still a thing. So
okay.
We would have online lectures on Monday and Wednesday, and then we'd go out on field trips Tuesday and Thursday and hike around and, you know, journal, might make little pictures of all the plants we were learning about. And
that was a great idea.
A great
yeah. That was a great idea, how to get everyone together and connect with each other. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett with intern Jackie and Ben, our producer today, and we're talking about graduating from college and what does that mean? What have you learned? What did you take away? And then what are you looking forward to as you move on into the next stage of your life, your young adulthood? We are invited to be part of the conversation, 805-781-3875. We're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about what is the economic forecast for the graduating class of 2026 right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
This is the first day of my life. Swear I was born right in the doorway. I went out in the rain, suddenly everything changed. They're spreading blankets on the beach. Yours is the first face that I saw. I think I was blind before I met you. And I don't know where I am, I don't know where I've been, but I know where I want to go. And so I thought I'd let you know. Yeah, these things take forever, I especially am slow. But I realized that I need you, and I wondered if I could come home. Remember the time you drove all night.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. We're talking about graduation 2026 and what is in store for our college graduates, for our high school graduates as well. Many of them will be going off to college, a third of them, if statistics hold. About 18% will do some sort of technical training afterwards, and some will go to junior college, and some will go right into the workforce. But for the graduates from college graduates of 2026, what do you have to look forward to? And also, what is some advice that might be helpful for young people setting out into the world? If you have something you'd like to share, our number is 805-781-3875. Because it's a little disappointing, Jackie, I'm sure for you, you know, to look at headlines, it didn't take me very long to find things that talked about one of the most challenging entry-level job markets in over a decade. Unemployment for recent college grads hit 5.6%, which is a four-year high. Entry-level jobs were only 38% of the postings. I mean, it's a lot of really challenging economic forecasting, And it always makes me sad when people are moving into the world bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and there seems to be kind of a slog ahead.
Yeah. It's definitely discouraging. Obviously, it's not, you know, I probably apply to 5 jobs a day.
You do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not even necessarily exactly a job that I am super passionate about, but it's just kind of to get my foot in the door. And obviously financially I need to have a job. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's definitely discouraging. I've kind of just gotten to the point where I am probably going to get a restaurant job like I've had for the past, I don't know, 8 years. Mm-hmm. And go to grad school hopefully at the same time, just so that I can get a master's degree, which will be a little bit more lucrative for potential jobs. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
so you feel almost forced in back end education to be able to stay in the psychology
a little world. Bit yeah, or just even if I don't want to do psychology, if I wanted to do literally anything else, I would probably need to get a master's degree or a graduate degree. So yeah, that's a little bit discouraging, but I don't know. I kind of lead my life with this blind faith, mm-hmm. in hopes that mm-hmm. everything will work out. I try to be as optimistic as I can, because I feel like when I put my energy towards worrying, bad things tend to happen. It's almost like I'm a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, obviously in general, the job market's not great. But I have tried to stay as hopeful as possible. And
are your friends finding work?
That's a good question. I feel like I know a couple of people. Yeah, there's a couple of people I know who, mostly it's like engineers and business degrees are getting jobs is what I've noticed, or like construction management. Liberal arts, it's a little more sparse. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say like my friends who I'm moving with, none of us have jobs lined up, but we know that we want to be together. Mm-hmm. And that we want to move together. So we're just deciding to do that. And then we're going to confront.
See what the job
market is. Yeah, exactly. And meet people where we're going to move to and all that stuff. So
some of the top potentials for work right now, nursing school mm-hmm. is really the hot ticket as far as growth and opportunity. If you come out with a already with a college graduate, that helps. But I also thought it was interesting, like the accounting, physical therapy is one of the fastest growing fields. Information science, psychology, though, is there at number 11 as far as career demand and growth in the market in different aspects of psychology. My first job out of college was as a real estate agent. That seemed like a good communications person's skilled job because mostly there was sales and other things, but didn't really know where I was going. Do you feel discouraged by the economy, or do you feel discouraged about not really knowing what to do with the degree?
I would say I'm more discouraged because I don't really know what to do with my degree.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, I when I look at my resume and I have interviews, what I'm talking about is the experience that I have that has nothing to do with my degree.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's probably the limits with my degree,
That's
I would
a challenge.
Say, yeah.
We had talked about this. I've talked about it on the show many times because I'm also a huge advocate of the service year programs, AmeriCorps, Teach for America, mm-hmm. Peace Corps, Workaway, HelpX. Now, there's so many great growth year programs that exist. And I'm always disappointed that most colleges and even high schools don't talk about those service-based growth years as being important stepping stones, because you're right. There really isn't a direct pathway for psychology into the work world. There isn't really for business either. Or, you mm-hmm. know, yes, there is for accounting because it's a specific job. But for most degrees, there's not a specific pipeline. You have to develop the experience and you have to meet people and network. And so, you know, I wish we'd talk more about this period of time from 22 to 25 when you can be out doing service for your country. It doesn't have to be military. It can be working for a nonprofit, again, through AmeriCorps, because they defer your student loans while you're out doing your service year. They cover your insurance, which is really important. They help with stipends for housing, and then they pay you for your time. Then you get these education stipends at the end. And I just want to put a plug in to that in general, but also to remind you that that's where you build the work experience, is by going into opportunities where you can build out a resume. You know, that doesn't really come right out of college.
Totally.
I mean, I lifeguarded at this campus pool for 4 years, so that wasn't a huge, you know, driver into this. But the work experience through doing these service years is so great. And Ben, you had talked about, you know, the desire or wanting service to be part of the national conversation.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. I had mm-hmm. this great idea one night in college where I was like, why doesn't everybody just go in and teach after college? You know, when everything's fresh in your mind, or go out and do some environmental work, or
build trails.
Yeah, go build some trails, go work with you know, outdoor education or any sort of education, you know, thing, and help out your peers in your community and meet other people doing the same.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And contribute to the greater good, mm-hmm. because we all do better when we feel like we have a purpose and a meaning and a reason for being here. You mentioned, like, I'm not finding my passion. Passion is overrated. I mean, you'll look back on your life and you'll go, oh, I developed passions in those areas. But you're never going to find that passion thing. That's a lot of wishing and hoping. But when you do things, when you actually go out and you build a trail, or you do a service here, you do some teaching or environmental, whatever those things are, even volunteering at places, you develop the skill sets, you develop the confidence, you develop the connections, and that's where our jobs come from, that people meet you and think you're amazing. Just why you're my intern, because you were my student and I knew, you know, your skill set and your ability to work with people. And I wish, again, that we talked more about that when people graduate from college, instead of this expectation of you're graduating, just start sending out random resumes. That feels very fly in, you know, pie in the sky way to do it, instead of what are the tangible things I can actually sign up and do and participate in, what programs exist to help get me there.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have strayed away from the corporate applications as much as possible. I would ideally want to work for a nonprofit if I can. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
You need that work experience.
Exactly.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. My guest is Jackie, my intern, and we're having Ben pipe in as well to get the young people's perspective on what they see are their opportunities as they move into young adulthood post-graduation. If you have any advice you'd like to share, our number is 805-781-3875. And Jackie, one of the other things I found interesting in kind of researching for the show, besides the economy, was the living arrangements for college graduates when they're leaving school. 47%, almost 50% of college graduates are moving back home. And we call it the cluttered nest in the psychology world, because a lot of parents kind of like having their nest cluttered again. When the kids moved out and they have the empty nest, a lot of parents who are really close to their kids kind of love the idea of everyone moving home and taking up space again. And it's good in an economy where times are tough. But the statistic I found interesting is that of the 47% that are moving back home, 45% of them are young men, and only 28% of young women are moving back home. What is going on with that?
Yeah, it's interesting that it's the majority of men who are moving home. I don't know what the reason for that is. I don't know if you have any ideas about why.
Well, the cynical reason is that they want to be able to play video games and have mom make food and do their laundry. I mean, that's
where my head, that's where my head went.
Because that comes up as a truth in a lot of research right now, that we've kind of almost are creating a lost generation of young men who are not employed or even looking for work.
Yeah. I know that, I mean, there's more women in college than there are men, right? I remember you teaching that in family psych. But yeah, at least speaking for myself, I knew that I really didn't want to move home, just because I felt like I would be, I don't know, almost stuck in a way, even though I know that I wouldn't be, but it just, for me, that's how it would feel. Even though I grew up in such a beautiful place and I love visiting, I just knew that I would kind of fall back into my own, you know, pre-college life. Mm-hmm. And so that really honestly wasn't even an option in my brain. I also knew that I didn't want to stay here in SLO, even though it also is such a great place, just because the majority of people that I have grown up throughout college with now wouldn't be here next year. Mm-hmm. So I would just be lonely.
because it totally changes with every graduating class, the whole dynamic and the environment changes.
Totally. So I knew that I didn't want to do that. So I'm moving down south to like North County, San Diego, somewhere where I honestly have not spent a lot of time, but I feel like it's the best fit for me. And I'm moving there with two of my best friends, Rel and Mia. And so we're just kind of taking a risk and moving down there and finding jobs and
being young 20s,
being young and picking a place that we felt like aligned with us, you know, being near the ocean and all those things. So that's kind of what my future is right now.
The immediate future.
Yeah, the immediate future. So I don't know exactly what the reason is for men moving home. Maybe it is the cynical.
or statistically based.
Yeah.
All right, Ben, You're 28, so you're post that immediate after college. But did you move home right after college?
No, I was going to say that's great advice, Jackie. That's the advice I would give to recently graduated people is to, when you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, mm-hmm. go out there and try and find a community where you haven't lived before and integrate yourself, and that's where you get real value. Me and my girlfriend, after graduating, we moved out to a small community in the Eastern Sierra, and we're able to integrate into that community really well, and it's been an amazing experience. And moving back to SLO just about 2 years ago, it was a real change to realize that all of our friends from college had moved away.
Yes.
it's one of those things.
And so what about living arrangements? Because it's expensive. People talk about housing, whether you're in college or you're in your 30s or at any age on the Central Coast, housing is a barrier in California to being able to create a life.
It is. It is. It really is, especially for, you know, young couples and people who, it's a very college oriented housing market here in SLO.
If you don't mind living with six people.
Right, exactly. So that's okay if you want to do that. But if you're trying to start a family or you're trying to do everything else, it might be easier to move in with a grandparent of a family member or something of those lines. But not everybody's that lucky. So,
well, I think that's what you're going to do, correct?
Yeah, me and my girlfriend are thinking about moving in with her grandma. It would be a really big change for us, but it'd be a great opportunity. And
I love that so much because, again, for the majority of history, we lived intergenerationally, multiple generationally. And so, this idea that we're going to, you know, live alone in a house is actually kind of current. You know, it wasn't until actually post-World War II that people moved into the suburbs and had their home with their nuclear family. Prior to World War II, you lived in a flat or in an apartment building and multiple relatives lived in the same building, or you lived in a small town and everyone was there. And so it's interesting that we've gotten so attached to this idea that a success for launching looks like somehow leaving home and living on your own or far away from the family or paying all the rent on your own. And then I think it leads to a lot of sadness and isolation and loneliness. And if there's a grandparent, I just think of myself, if I didn't have my husband, even with my husband as we get older, I think I would love to open my home to my grandchildren, not my own children. I think that generational change is important. I think moving in with mom and dad is tough. As Jackie mentioned, then you all of a sudden are your 16-year-old self again. But to have that cross-generational experience, that intergenerational support. We've got the house and you need a place and we need help around the house. And we saw a bit of this shift after the 2008 economic crash. People started moving back home at high numbers. And then COVID also brought people back together. Aside from the idea that people move back home to live in their parents' basement and play video games, that doesn't feel like a healthy living situation, but to move in intentionally with a grandparent or an aging aunt or uncle to have this mutual benefit. I don't know. I would love to see that return without the stigma.
Yeah. No, I think it's a fantastic idea. One of my cousins is actually living with my grandparents.
And okay.
She's doing an amazing job helping them out. And it's just, it makes sense, you know.
So. My niece lived with us for 18 months after graduating from Kapolei. And it was, again, mutually beneficial. It was great. It's not my daughter, so we didn't have any of the conflicts you would have. What do you think, Jackie?
Yeah, I like that idea. I mean, I enjoy spending time with my grandparents. I have had them. Like, I've spent a lot of time with them in my life. We've lived really close to each other, so I got really lucky. And they've been very involved with my college and all of that stuff. My grandpa was the one who really motivated me to go to college because I am the first person to get a college degree in my, like, immediate family.
Well,
so,
congratulations. Thank you. You are a first-gen student.
Thank you. He really encouraged me to do that. But, honestly is a great idea. I wouldn't even think of that. Because, yeah, when you think about living back home with your parents, it's almost like, I don't know, it's a little, for me, it would be a little difficult. But grandparent-wise, it would be nice to have the fulfillment of helping them because they've given us so much.
Mm-hmm. And usually grandparents are living kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice places. I had students a few years ago who were getting married right out of college, and they had a whole plan of how they were going to save money to be able to have a family. And this was their plan. They both had big jobs coming out of Cal Poly, engineering jobs, and their grandfather lived right down, you know, in Silicon Valley, and he had an RV, and he is going to let them live in the RV in his driveway so they'd have their own space, no cost. They had one car, and they were going to drive each other to their jobs and just save money, save money, save money. And they showed me this spreadsheet, and in 10 years, they'll have made enough money to quit those jobs and to buy some land in another state, like Nevada, and have three children, right, all planned, and then raise those three kids and then still be young enough, because at that point they'd be like 32, 35, raise them, they'd go back then and work for another 20 years and just enjoy life. Like, that was masterful. And to have the grandparent who said, hey, I've got an RV and a driveway so you can have your privacy, and I've got, you know, you here. I just...
Do you know if that worked out?
I knew the first 5 years how well it was going, and then I've kind of lost touch. So I don't know. I would love to have the end of that happy story.
Yeah.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett with my guest, Jackie, my intern, and Ben, our producer today. And our number is 805-781-3875. And I do find it interesting that when you ask for advice, that no one is forthcoming, because most people love to give unsolicited advice.
Yeah.
Whenever
I would love to hear some wisdom.
I know. Right now you're probably looking for it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the college commencement, because I know that you're going to go and you're going to take it seriously. I wish people would not drink before they went, like, be present. But I've read a lot about people booing any mention of AI at commencement speeches. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
And why? What is the booing?
Well, I've seen a lot of videos of commencement speakers talking about the future of AI and how it's, I don't know, going to be inevitably incorporated into our lives. And I don't know. I don't really see why they feel the need to talk about that.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's...
Would you be booing if that was...
Yeah, I mean, I almost don't feel like it's relevant. We're celebrating the past 4 years of really hard work, and I don't see the relevance in talking about AI.
How do you feel about AI in your future?
Well, luckily I studied psychology, so I don't really think that is a field, at least I hope not, that's going to be taken over by AI. So career-wise, it's kind of been not in my sphere. I know a lot of people who are really who, you know, got degrees into finance, and they're super worried about their futures, and that's, I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. I do think that AI has kind of created this generation of people who have a hard time critically thinking and thinking on a deeper level, because we're kind of transitioning over to,
hey, let's
know,
just say what just, it is. My students are going to AI to have them write their papers.
Yes.
And their brains are mushing.
Yeah.
And that's gonna
what
be
it
something
feels
we have
like.
To deal with.
That's exactly what it feels like.
that's the bottom line, I think, for the what's missing education. But Ben, why are the students booing AI at commencement?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, there's the people who will subscribe to the idea that AI is the future and
inevitable.
Will be inevitable and all-encompassing. But I don't know if I really believe that, as well as a lot of other people. I think the human experience is kind of more important than, like, losing a lot of our autonomy to AI. Yeah, it's hard to predict the future as well. So, but I think the way AI has gone, and a lot of the, you know, politics that are associated with AI up and coming right now, is really not aligned with a lot of people's worldview.
Yeah.
So
the hopes and dreams. Well, and I think what I say to my students is that you're graduating at probably one of the greatest times in history because everything is incredibly uncertain. And that means that that dissonance is the, you know, right before change, great change. It won't be easy. It's going to be something totally disruptive. But they're on the, you're in the moment where things are going to be different and you will be able to create your life without the same constraints or restraints that those who graduated in the 60s or 70s or even 80s did, where there was kind of this conveyor belt of getting into corporate world. Like, that's all been blown up since COVID. And it'll be interesting if you can sustain your resilience and your confidence to be ready for whatever that next opportunity is and not get sunk by bemoaning what used to be. So, Jackie, in our last minute, what is it you're going to miss about your experience here?
First off, I would say I'm going to miss the people. Mm-hmm. They have made my college experience so amazing. And then I'm going to miss San Luis Obispo as a whole. I am so grateful to have been able to go to college here, and it's one of the most beautiful places in the nation. I'm going to miss driving and looking at Madonna and Bishop, and I live right next to Bishop, so I'm going to be sad to not wake up every morning and see the sunrise and with the mountains and be able to be so close to the beach. I'm going to miss all of that. But yeah, most importantly, I'm going to miss the people and just inherently being able to be around people my age. Mm-hmm. I don't have to search for that. It's just a given, living in SLO. So yeah, I'm really going to miss Cal Poly a lot. And I'm very thankful to have been able to have gone here.
Well, I am thankful you've spent some time being my intern the last couple of quarters. I enjoyed spending this time with you. Congratulations, first-gen graduate.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Find me on Facebook, Instagram. Leave me a message there. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Or please podcast the show and share it with friends so we can build our audience and our community. And thank you, as always, for tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Go on.